Coming up on Tech News Weekly, how NDAs are impacting discrimination in the workplace. Also, a high school graduate joins the show. He actually created an app for yearbook signing in the COVID-19 age. And finally, how the 5G rollout isn't actually being slowed down by the coronavirus that much. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Weekly. Tech News Weekly is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Tech News Weekly, episode 140, recorded Thursday, July 2nd, 2020. This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi is enterprise-class cloud storage at one-fifth the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com and enter code TWIT. And by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, especially right now, but there's one place you can go where you can get a quality candidate within the first day. That place is ZipRecruiter. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TNW. Hello, welcome to Tech News Weekly. I'm Jason Howell. This is the show where we talk to people making and breaking the tech news each and every week. It's good to have you here. Micah is off today. You know, I took off last week. Micah's out today. It's just the way it worked out. So, Micah, I miss you. He'll be back next week. So, let's dive in to the first story here. We're obviously undergoing a crazy moment of historic importance, particularly as related to the inequalities of people of color in the U.S. and around the world. With that focused attention comes a sort of reckoning right now of how people and how companies have acted poorly in the past in ways that have directly impacted their coworkers and employees. We probably hear a lot more about stories like these if it weren't for a tool that companies use to silence their workers when they leave, and sometimes when they leave, you know, from a bad or difficult situation, like some of these stories might actually be coming from. So joining me is Emily Birnbaum from Protocol to talk about how the modern NDA is interfering with progress around raising awareness on these issues in the tech workplace. Welcome back to the show, Emily.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
You bet. It's great to get you back. So you start your piece talking about Paris Athena, who actually we had as a guest on the show not too long ago, back on episode 136. And I think it kind of encapsulates this perfectly. Talk a little bit about her situation, how it illustrates the struggles that employees are facing when it comes to these NDAs.
Yeah, so Paris, a couple of weeks ago, was asked to be on a podcast, you know, talk about her experiences as a Black woman in web development and how her career, has ebbed and flowed. And at one point during the podcast, you know, she just thought, well, we're undergoing a moment where people are taking seriously stories about discrimination and racism in the workplace, so I'm going to share mine. So she shared a story about an internship that she did 2 years ago with a large tech company in which she was paired with a back-end developer who is, you know, sort of supposed to be her mentor. And, you know, it didn't take her too long to realize that this mentor was, according to her, not an ally. So when she went to his Facebook page, she saw that it was filled with anti-Black Lives Matter content. When she looked at his computer screen, she saw Confederate flags and content that made her uncomfortable. And ultimately, she said it sort of ruined the internship for her. So she talked about that on a podcast. And then just shortly after the podcast went up, she went to the host and she said, "Can you actually please take that part down? Because I forgot that I signed an NDA." So she was ready to speak out about her story and raise awareness around this company. She named the company in the podcast, but ultimately that podcast host took it down because she didn't want to face legal retribution. And I think that's only one of many, many, many stories that are never really going to see the light of day because people have signed NDAs.
Yeah, and the NDA, I mean, it's not, you know, specific to just this moment. I mean, NDAs have been around for a very, very, very long time. The threat of the possible threat of what could happen to me if I actually share this story. I mean, it's great. These companies have deep pockets compared to, you know, a single person that maybe has a really, you know, important story to share about this that could actually move the needle or make some change or even put the company under a spotlight to force them to change. But they can do nothing because they're powerless compared to those deep pockets and kind of the power of the NDA. What are some of those risks? Is it monetary? Is it something greater than that? And do these employees, like, are they explicitly aware of these NDAs, or is it the kind of thing that kind of gets slipped in there?
Well, there are a lot of different kinds of NDAs. So the most ubiquitous kind of NDA is obviously the one that you sign when you're being onboarded, when you are a new employee. And oftentimes that includes some kind of non-disparagement clause, you know, some kind of language that says you can't talk about your time at the company. That in itself is always going to hinder what people are able to say. Then there are stricter forms of NDAs. So there are NDAs that you sign, you know, after there's been some internal conflict at the company and they're basically saying, please don't talk about this. There are NDAs you sign after you yourself have gone through mediation and either, you know, you've decided on a settlement or you've decided on a severance, you know, on your way out. And those are often very strict, very limiting, you know, explicitly designed to silence you about that discrimination or, you know, that conflict that you experienced. And I mean, you asked about the risk. I think there are levels of risk. So the first risk is just speaking out in general comes with a lot of stigma. You know, you want to be in tech. You feel excited to be in tech. So you don't want to be seen as, you know, a problematic employee for future companies who you might want to be hired by. That in itself, it's reputational. And then if you look at that and you say, you know, this is important enough, I want to tell my story, it's very expensive. So it's expensive to, you know, say hire a lawyer to review your NDA to see what kind of risks you're even facing. And then it's very expensive if that company actually sues you for violating your NDA. So, you know, I spoke to some lawyers who said it can cost between, you know, $10,000 if you go through just discovery to $100,000 if that company decides to take it all the way. So there are enormous risks. What we know is that oftentimes NDAs are sort of more bark than bite. So only about like 10% of the time do companies actually sue you for violating it. But just imagine how much there is, you know, how much people are putting on the line. You know, they have children, families, lives, and not everybody can afford to go through such a pricey and lengthy and emotionally taxing experience.
Yeah. So when I hear about this, and obviously, you know, we read about daily kind of the struggles and the stories, and realizing, at least for me, realizing the good that comes out of just getting all of this out on the table, very similar to what we've been going through with the Me Too movement over the past couple of years. Like, there's a lot of value to this in just improving everyone's quality of life. So there's almost a greater importance that's kind of roped into this. Is there any, like, is there any situation where someone breaking, like, explicitly breaking an NDA for the greater good, like, overrules, you know, the possibility of, let's say, financial burden on the other side of that? Like, I don't know, like maybe the courts say, well, okay, in retrospect, this was actually really important, so the NDA is invalid. Or is the NDA just like the end of the road? It's like, no, it's there in stone. And it doesn't matter how important this realization of this thing is that you've talked about, you're still liable.
Yeah, the NDA is somewhat set in stone. I think it really depends on the judge and the case and the kind of evidence that you're able to present. But you've signed that document ultimately. But, you know, you mentioned the Me Too movement. A lot of people said that what we're talking about right now parallels that. We couldn't have had a Me Too movement if women didn't come out en masse and say, I'm going to break my NDA. I'm going to break this silence, because without it, we're not going to move forward as a society. Someone else really rightfully pointed out to me over the course of reporting this article that also paralleling it to the Me Too movement is somewhat inexact, because a lot of the women who came out, you know, whose stories we heard first for Me Too were some of the most privileged, wealthy women in the country. They were predominantly white women. You know, they had been at the upper echelons of society in media and entertainment. And even for them, it was really hard for them to come out and tell their stories. So then you have to think about, you know, we're talking about the stories of everyday Black and brown employees in these tech companies, you know, where they're already underrepresented, they're already marginalized. So it's sort of a different set of stakes around this stuff. And I just think ultimately, a lot of people are going to tell their story, and we, you know, have to sort of give credence to how much bravery that would take.
No, no question. Absolutely. I mean, just to make that decision and say, I'm willing to kind of put myself in front of everyone and not just tell my story, but explicitly break a pre-made agreement. Like, it takes a lot of courage to do that. So yeah, that's such an important point. Now, the NDAs, like, there's a little bit of a double standard that's happening right now too, right? Because, like, on one hand, you've got these companies who have forced, you know, their employees to sign these NDAs to never talk about this stuff. And then on the other hand, you know, they're coming out in support of Black Lives Matter, and they are, you know, putting their support behind that, whatever that may look like. So it's almost like they're playing both sides of the game. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one of the most high profile examples of people coming out and discussing racism they experienced at a tech company over this last month has been Ifeoma and Erica at Pinterest. You know, their story has gone viral. It's really touched a lot of people. And you know, what they have said is they were just so enraged when they saw that Pinterest had come out with a Black Lives Matter statement. You know, they had said, we support our Black employees in this moment, and we're going to commit to diversity in this way. And they said, well, that rings disingenuous to me because I was underpaid and I was disrespected and marginalized and overlooked as a Black employee at your company. And I'm nowhere near alone. You know, for every one story, they said there are dozens more specifically around Pinterest, and then, you know, broaden that out to the rest of the industry. So That I think, you know, these statements and these commitments by these companies is specifically what might lead to an inflection point right now, because people are going to say, okay, you know, if you really are committed to diversity, then open up, you know, your doors and let us see what's really going on, and, you know, let all of your employees break their NDAs, and then let's really have an honest, genuine conversation.
Oh man, that's such a great point. Like, we can only hope that that'll happen. Now, a lot of times with NDAs, they're coupled with some sort of a severance package. You know, if an employee is on their way out, they negotiate for something like that. And so the NDA is kind of tied up with this monetary payout at the end of the day. I have to imagine a lot of the people that you spoke to for your piece, like, feel conflicted possibly, or even regretful about that. I mean, what was your take on that as far as how the people felt about taking that severance and then now looking backwards and being like, man, maybe I shouldn't have done that, or would they have made a different choice?
I think it's very complicated because a lot of the people who spoke to me, they signed that severance when there was really no other option presented to them. Yeah. They were already on the way out. They were being abused in the workplace. They just wanted to get out of there, and then they wanted to be able to sustain themselves, you know, until their next gig. They had family, friends, people relying on them. They had lives, and they just kind of wanted to close that chapter because it was, you know, traumatizing. Sure. For many of them. And so I think that every single person I spoke to had like a special kind of empathy for how hard it is to say no when someone is offering you money in exchange for your silence, especially when it's something you don't even think that you'll want to talk about. You know, a lot of people say it's really retrospective, like later you realize, oh, that happened to me and it was bad and I want to talk about it. But they have, you know, they feel for that person who was in that room signing that contract. So I think there's a... Some people are beginning to advise their friends, you know, if you're going to sign something, have a lawyer look at it, really think twice about the possible ramifications. But you have to think a lot about the power disparity when someone is signing one of these contracts. You know, they're one person. This is a company with tons and tons of money, really deep pockets. And overall, I don't know if the onus should be on them. It should be on companies not to be putting them in mm-hmm. front of them, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. And I would absolutely agree 100%. Emily Birnbaum writes for protocol.com, and just thrilled to get you back on so soon. Emily, thank you so much. If people want to follow you online, where can they find you?
Birnbaum_E on Twitter.
Right on. Thank you again, Emily. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much. You too. Happy 4th.
All right. Thank you so much, Emily. Coming up, an app for graduating high school students that's actually designed with social distancing in mind. We're going to talk about. We're going to talk to the creator of that app, also a very recent graduate. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Wasabi is the perfect solution for managed service providers to sell because they can earn more while charging less. It's also 80% cheaper than Amazon S3 and significantly cheaper than on-premise storage. Typically, you can store data in Wasabi's cloud for less than just the annual cost of the maintenance fees on the same amount of on-prem storage. Wasabi's disruptive price and performance model actually makes buying cloud storage a natural addition. And now there are two ways to pay. You can pay as you go, or you can pay one time with reserved capacity storage. Now, Wasabi's reserved capacity storage makes buying cloud storage a natural addition to your on-prem storage. If you're thinking about buying more hardware storage, compare the price against 5 years of reserved capacity storage, and you can purchase cloud storage in 1, 3, or 5 year increments and achieve greater discounts for term and capacity. And with Wasabi, security is often even greater than on-premise storage. Provides 11 nines of durability. This means on average, you'd lose one file every 649,000 years. Hosted in premier tier 4 data center facilities that are highly secure. They're fully redundant, which is incredibly important. Wasabi is secure by default, and all data stored in the Wasabi cloud is always encrypted at rest, even if the requesting party doesn't specify encryption. And Wasabi follows industry best security models and design practices. Access control mechanisms such as bucket policies and access control lists can be used to selectively grant permissions. Your data will be immutable, preventing data from being erased or altered, and you'll be protected from hackers, malware, and yourself, which is pretty important. Wasabi has active integrity checking where all objects stored are checked for integrity every 90 days. It's HIPAA, FINRA, and CJIS compliant. And Wasabi is not just highly secure disruptive technology that's turning the industry on its ear. It's storage that's 80% cheaper and up to 6 times the speed of the industry leader. Calculate the savings for yourself and start a free trial of storage for 1 month. Go to wasabi.com, click the free trial link, and enter code TWIT. You'll join the movement and migrate your data to the cloud with confidence. Go to wasabi.com and make sure to use the offer code TWIT. And we thank Wasabi for their support. So, high school graduation, usually a moment that's filled with excitement, it's celebration. Students, of course, are saying goodbye to their adolescent education lifestyle and transitioning toward adulthood. So it's a big moment. Many of the rituals, things like prom, graduation ceremonies, even yearbook signing, have either gone away entirely or shifted to a different form because of sheltering in place, of course. It's had a big impact on things. And that is often where innovation is born. And joining me is Jamil Shivji. He's the co-creator of the Hags app, which makes signing yearbooks in the age of corona possible. Congrats on your graduation and welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much.
It's awesome to get you on. Yeah, you bet, man. It's great to have you on here. Like I said, congratulations. You graduated. That's a huge milestone, huge step. Before we kind of get into the app, I wanted to ask you something just kind of on a more personal level, because I've been thinking about this a lot as we've kind of been in this weird coronavirus world for the past couple of months. Thought a lot about what it must feel like as a student, and particularly a graduating student, to not have the same experience as the graduates before you. Everybody's so used to these being the things that happen when you graduate. And then this year turned it all upside down for everyone. What was that experience? What has that been like for you?
It's definitely been a roller coaster for me sure. And all my friends. I feel like we really just think we're in like a simulation when it started happening. And even drive-through graduation, it just felt a bit just surreal. And I think I've sort of gotten used to the fact that it's not a normal situation. But yeah, it was definitely disappointing and frustrating, but also I completely get it.
Well, disappointing, frustrating, and yet you, unlike I'm sure a lot of students out there, didn't like sit back and be like, well, this is just the way it's going to be. You actually did something about it, which is incredible, which is remarkable. Like a true entrepreneur, who you obviously are, you saw this missing puzzle piece and made it. So I guess we can talk a little bit about HAGS, the HAGS app, which is all about, at least right now, yearbook signing. At what point did you come up with the idea for the app? And what was it like to kind of develop this from the start? Like, what was your experience like?
Yeah, totally. It was crazy. It was super, super organic and natural. So my sister came back from New York right when COVID started happening, about like 3 months ago, mid-March. And we were kind of talking about everything I was going to miss and as my last year of high school. And so I was kind of basically complaining that I don't get to fill out my last yearbook. And so then we were like, why don't we make a digital yearbook this year? And like, so people can sign everyone's yearbooks through Snapchat and make it super easier and super relaxed. And yeah, that's sort of how the idea came up. And then we kind of started working on it every day and like got the branding done and like the design and how we wanted it to really feel rustic yet playful and like just super natural and like sort of like a physical yearbook.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And yeah. You mentioned your sister, of course. Your sister has experience in the technology world.
Right.
And not to mention, it's your sister. You're creating something awesome with your sister.
Exactly.
That's got to be really cool. What was that like? Have you ever done any sort of collaboration like this with your sister? And I'm sure this is the kind of thing that kind of brings you even closer together than you were before.
Yeah, no, we've never done something like this. So it was a super new and fun experience. We worked on it every day and she would sort of, yeah, like you said, she has like a background in tech and I have absolutely no background in tech at all. So it was quite a learning experience for me and she kind of guided me through it. We worked on design together and product together and she sort of handled the technological engineering aspect of it. And I also headed the ambassador program where we got high school students from like all over the country to support HAGS and be excited for HAGS and just look forward to it. And yeah, that's sort of how we split up the roles. And like, we definitely got closer. I think we're telepathic now. So yeah, it's been great.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
So we should also let people know who aren't familiar with the app. HAGS stands for Have right. a Good Summer. Which, I remember in the days of yearbook signing, that's a pretty common, pretty standard thing to put into somebody's yearbook.
Yeah.
Talk about how this app works. Like, this is obviously not your everyday yearbook, the like, physical yearbook that is passed around and signed and everything like that. Like, what kind of sets this apart and makes it perfect for right now?
Yeah, totally. So when you download the app, you basically sign in through Snapchat and it connects to your Snapchat account. And then you enter in your high school, graduation year, and state. And basically you open up to your yearbook and it's sort of like you can flip the pages and we wanted to sort of simulate the feeling of an actual yearbook. And then you can, that's where your signatures will show up in the yearbook. And then on the top right-hand corner, you can go to your class and see basically everyone in your class who's on HAGS and their Bitmojis. And so it's kind of like a nice, intimate community that we've created. And we're super, super happy how it's turned out.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. And then you have also kind of worked in the ability to turn this digital yearbook into a physical one because it's hard to get away entirely from physical. Maybe there will be a time where it's all digital, kind of like photos are now, it seems like. But I think what sets this apart and makes it really special is, at least I read your interview with previous host of this show, Megan Maroney, on 1-0.
Yes.
And you mentioned in that interview that the proceeds that come in for turning this into a physical yearbook actually go to charity. You have a commitment to charity. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So basically when we were about to launch, it was around the time George Floyd was murdered. And so like the rest of the country, the rest of the world, we were very frustrated and sad and trying to figure out what we could do. And so we pushed launch and we basically added this to where the users can purchase a physical yearbook, a physical version of their HAGS yearbook, and all the charity, all the donations will go to Know Your Rights Camp. And we really gravitated towards Know Your Rights Camp because it sort of focuses on like the Black youth and like empowering them and like just giving them the same opportunities and everything. And so we really like that because our app is mainly focused on youth and like high schoolers. So yeah, we just wanted to do our part.
I love it. And what a big part you're doing for not just for the charity, but also for just like expanding, you know, other graduating seniors who might be a little disgruntled or frustrated with the reality that is now. And here's a great alternative. So I love what you're doing. How has adoption been? Like how, like you've gotten the word out and everything like that. What are you learning about kind of how your users are using the app? And yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, people are loving it. I think people really love, it's been great to see how much they love like the design and like the playfulness of the app, how it's kind of rustic. And that kind of, we've seen that like that's kind of what gets people engaged, not only the functionality of the app. And so it's been great and really gratifying to see that and just see people get yearbook signatures and like post them to their stories and like their Instagrams and just kind of have a fun time with the app, even though we're in such a weird situation and climate in our world. It's great that Hags can bring a little positivity to just the world.
Absolutely. I love it. So it is what it is right now, but of course any entrepreneur will probably look at the thing they created and think of a million different ways that they can make it better or expand into a different direction or that sort of stuff. Right. What are your ideas for the future? I realize it just launched, so you're probably really focused on just, you know, supporting what it is, but you've got to have some ideas about what it could be. What are you thinking there?
Oh yeah. Tons of ideas. I mean, we're really going in the direction of creating a place where high schoolers can hang out during the school day and outside of the school day just with their classmates in a low barrier, intimate way. And so we're really trying to build off the class aspect and the unity of school and how it's sort of like classes and schools are like cults in a way. And that's not really shown digitally. So we're definitely going in that direction. And we're super excited to experiment with it.
Right on. You have to be super proud of what you've accomplished. Prior to this, like, did you ever see yourself getting into this sort of thing, creating an app, creating a service? Was it ever something that you were interested in before? And how do you feel like this is shaping what your future is going to be? Is this like opening your eyes to something that you didn't realize you were interested in? And now you're like, hey, wait a minute. I really like this. I want to do more of this.
Yeah, it's crazy. I never really saw myself going into this space. And everything's been happening super fast. So it's honestly been super hard to process everything. Going forward, I love Hags and I love what I'm doing. And I also love acting and screenwriting, what I was originally going to just go into. So it's definitely going to be fun to sort of balance everything and see how that goes. But I definitely want to keep working for Hags, with Hags, and eventual kind of opportunities that come from it.
There's nothing that says that you can't do both, especially when you know, screenwriting and everything is such a creative endeavor. And I would say, I would argue that now is actually a really great time for someone who wants to create a career in this. Like there is a lot of opportunity for people to get really creative with the limitations that we have in sheltering in place. So if that's the direction that you're going, and you've got all the tools to do it right now. And so that's awesome. I love that you're doing this and I love that you created this and that you have such big ambitions. And that we could get you on the show, Jamil. Thank you so much for hopping on with us today.
Thanks so much, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Jamil Shivji. The app is Hags App on iOS, right? Not Android yet.
iOS.
Question mark?
Not Android yet.
Okay. Hags.app. www.hags.app to check it out. And we hope that you do. Thank you again, Jamil. Best of luck.
Thanks so much.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. All right, up next, this was supposed to be a big year for 5G. You know, you've heard about 5G time after time after time. Everybody had such big expectations for it. Well, then what else? COVID-19 happened. But has it actually changed the trajectory of the technology? Well, we're gonna talk with Shara Tipkin from CNET about that after this break. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring, as you know, can be difficult, maybe even more difficult right now. If you're a company that's currently trying to hire, you face very new difficulties. Housing Wire could relate. They needed to hire an ambitious reporter to cover news stories on the U.S. housing markets. So they turned to ZipRecruiter, and that's how Housing Wire found Alexandra Roja. Alexandra never imagined, actually, that she could get a reporter job during COVID-19. So she created a profile on ZipRecruiter, which you can do as well. ZipRecruiter matched Alexandra to Housing Wire's reporter job because her degree and her writing skills were actually a great fit for the role. And this is a big part about what ZipRecruiter is all about. It kind of matches your talents and your abilities to the jobs that are listed there. HousingWire received her application only 4 hours after they posted the job. So things are happening lightning fast. A few weeks later, Alexandra started her dream career. And that is just so awesome. We were just talking about in the previous story how, you know, these limitations create new opportunities. Well, here you go. ZipRecruiter really does make the hiring process so much easier than it has been and than it has to be. So you should definitely check it out. Let ZipRecruiter help you hire. And see why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day, just like Housing Wire did. Try it now for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TNW. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNW. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Weekly. All right. So like I said, 5G, it was set to make 2020 its year, right? But the coronavirus had other plans, as it has with pretty much everything in the world right now. As a result, the next-gen mobile network that's perhaps designed with mobility in mind has had to emerge in a time when people quite simply haven't been very mobile at all. Everybody's kind of locked down right now. But that has actually slowed down maybe parts of the process, but has it actually slowed down the momentum? That's what we're going to talk about. Shara Tipkin from CNET wrote about this and joins me now. Welcome back to the show, Shara.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's great to have you back. So first of all, you write that though the rollout of 5G has slowed, the actual rollout has slowed down, that doesn't mean necessarily that progress on 5G has slowed down. Can you talk about your points there?
What we're seeing in some regions is that networks aren't getting turned on as quickly. Maybe devices are a little delayed, but all of these companies are really still working on 5G. And the surprising thing that's come out of the pandemic is that this hasn't really impacted the rollout and the progress all that much. Devices had been planned for a couple years, so we're still seeing those come out. Network operators are still turning on their networks. Everybody is still really pushing with this. We're seeing new standards coming out. People are really able to respond to what's happening and are working at home. Places that normally where you'd have to go into a lab, they're finding that, hey, you actually can work just as well remotely as you could, in some cases, in the office. So all of that means that even though 5G could have, you know, it slowed down a little bit, it's not going to be stopped. You know, this is really going to just keep coming and keep spreading, and we're going to see it, you know, everywhere over the next few years.
Yeah, next couple of years are critical. So why might people feel that 5G is needed when, you know, as you say, like we're all at home right now, we're working, we've got broadband here. So what is the use or the need for 5G in this kind of current environment when we have broadband already at home? Is the idea that at some point that usage might actually switch entirely to 5G away from the broadband that we're used to?
I don't think that anybody is really expecting all of us to be using 5G constantly at home, at least not anytime soon. We've seen Verizon and some other companies use 5G to power broadband at home. But one of the things about 5G that people kind of forget about is that it's not just about fast speeds. It's also about super, super fast responsiveness. So the latency is much lower than what you get with 4G or what you get with Wi-Fi right now. If anybody's had to do a Zoom birthday call during the pandemic, you know, when everybody, had to sing together and it's awful. Like, it is terrible. Everybody's out of sync. It just is really a horrible experience. And 5G, kind of with the latency, is something that could help with that. when it starts rolling out and when applications kind of take advantage of it and things like that. It doesn't mean like tomorrow all the Zoom birthday calls are going to be in sync, but this is something that could be helped by it. And it's something that we're all, you know, directly seeing right now.
I don't know. I think it's a killer application. We've all had that experience. Personally, I enjoy reveling in the badness of it. So I'm usually like purposefully off key and off point because there's just no, you're right. There's just no way making it good. Obviously, yeah. That is just one example. But so China, obviously very important to the creation, the development of 5G. It was also the first place to be impacted by COVID-19. How has that kind of transformed and evolved over the recent months? Still a huge player right now and effectively doing development with 5G?
Yeah, so what happened was China was obviously impacted by coronavirus first. And in February, basically everything ground to a halt there. That was one of the worst month of smartphone sales in I think like a decade or something like that. It was really terrible. Horrible. But yeah, so China was offline really fast and completely, but then it came back online really quickly. So most production is back working. Networks are getting turned on really quickly. And what has happened is China's actually rolling out 5G faster than what people thought it was going to be doing this year. So Ericsson had this forecast about the number of 5G subscriptions this year, and it almost doubled what it had previously expected, and all of that is because of China. It's kind of remarkable how fast 5G is rolling out there.
Wow. Yeah, no kidding. Now, you also write that the U.S. is looking to be more on schedule with its 5G roadmap, but then you compare against Europe and then also Canada. What's happening differently in places like Canada right now compared to the U.S. rollout?
The biggest issue that you see in places like Canada and parts of Europe is spectrum. So these are the airwaves that power our devices. You know, for 5G, there's different flavors of spectrum that you need. And the issue is that carriers aren't able to buy the spectrum right now in places like Canada. There's usually a big auction. All the carriers can bid to buy spectrum so that they're able to set up their networks. Canada's auction has been delayed to next summer from later this year. So that just pushes everything out. In the U.S., a lot of the carriers have a lot of spectrum already. They already had started rolling this out. So that's less of an issue here. In Canada, they want the carriers to be able to focus on helping people during the pandemic instead of looking at 5G. So it just kind of has really slowed everything down there.
So one thing that I read in your article that I was actually happy to come across, because I wondered about this, maybe not as relates to 5G specifically, but it makes perfect sense, is the fact that right now streets are much emptier, sidewalks are emptier. So this paves the way, so to speak, for a lot of this hard work to be done with minimal obstruction. And you write that that's kind of happening right now. So that's another part of how this is sustaining in the coronavirus world.
Verizon said that they're able to put in new fiber, put up antennas. All of the carriers are doing this, actually. So, I mean, if you think about it, you have to get permits, which can take a long time. But now, because there aren't people out on the streets, there's not as much traffic, this can go a lot faster once you actually get that permit. So they're able to, you know, tear up the streets as they need to put in new fiber, install antennas around cities, all kinds of things to just kind of like get the infrastructure built because there aren't tons of people out and about.
And I think at the end of the day, you know, maybe this is looking with rose-tinted glasses, but maybe this means to a certain degree that the pandemic, the shelter in place, all that might be a catalyst for more impactful growth of 5G compared to where it was before? Or is that just making a good thing out of sour apples as far as where we're at right now?
Honestly, I don't know if it means here in the U.S. that it's going to be coming faster. I do think it means that it's going to be pretty much everywhere in a lot of major cities anyway. Rural areas are kind of a different story. We are seeing build outs in some places, but it coming to kind of blanket coverage everywhere is still going to take a little while. T-Mobile has nationwide coverage AT&T will have it this year, Verizon. That doesn't mean that it's everywhere. It just means that it covers 200 million people, which is an important distinction. But yeah, I mean, we're really seeing this kind of, what's really happening is the devices are ready, the networks are ready. It's just a question of if anybody's going to sign up for the service and buy these phones.
Yep. And I'm sure eventually we won't have a whole lot of choice, right? Like already in these devices, whether we intend to buy a device that's 5G capable or not, we're starting to just get devices that are, whether we need it now or not. So, you know, in a couple of years, it's just going to be even more ubiquitous as far as that's concerned. So Shara Tipkin writes for CNET, CNET.com. I love your work. Thank you so much for hopping on. If people want to follow you online, where can they do so?
I am on Twitter at Shara Tipkin. Also, you can read my work at CNET.
Right on. Thank you, Shara. Best of luck and have a great fourth. We'll talk
Thanks.
To you soon. Take care. All right. And that is it for this episode of Tech News Weekly. Again, like I said, Micah Sargent will be back next week with me, and I look forward to that. If you want to follow the show or watch the show or not even think about when it publishes because you're subscribed, right? You're subscribed. Well, if you aren't subscribed, go to twit.tv/TNW. We publish the show every Thursday, and you have all the different ways there on the site to subscribe, all the different podcatchers. You can link out to YouTube so you can subscribe there, like, do all your YouTube things. But yeah, subscribe, and then you don't have to think about it. And we appreciate when you do that. You can also email us to be part of the show, tnw@twit.tv. And if you want to tweet at me, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Jason Howell. I also do other shows on the network, All About Android, of course, and then Hands on Android, which you can find at twit.tv/HOA. And I'm suddenly blanking on what this week's topic is because it literally just went live. It is, oh, that's right, reclaiming lost storage on your Android device. I talk a little bit about something called adoptable storage and how you can find more storage when your device is running out of space. That is a challenge that we all have with our mobile devices. So hopefully that'll be helpful to you. Thanks to everyone who helps us do the show each and every week. Thanks to John at the studio, also Burke. And thanks to you for watching and listening each and every week. We'll see you next time on Tech News Weekly. Bye, everybody.
Be sure to check out the other shows on the network, like my other show, Hands On Wellness. I love to share different tips and tricks that's going to help you get a better grasp on your personal wellness. Just go to twit.tv/how and subscribe now.